With Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org.
I'm speaking with Michelle Seeger, and we're talking about the four disruptors that may get in the way of us wanting to take the steps that we want to take, even when we have the goals. Michelle, I know for myself, when I hear them, I haven't taken the quiz yet, but I think the perfection might be the one that either gets me into motion because I know I can do it, or it might just take me into a state of inertia if I can't do it perfectly. So that's the one I'm going to be working with going forward. But I'm wondering what you see as the most common out there when you work with clients who come to you.
You know, I think perfection might be the biggest one. And the reason why is because, and this, there's been a natural evolution in our culture to think in very prescribed, myopic, specific ways when it comes to exercising and dietary decisions. And the reason is because the value of these behaviors really comes out of medical research, and then that gets spread to the media, and the media tells us how much we should do and how hard we should do it and how often we should do it and how much of this fruit and vegetable we should have. And so it truly cultivates an all or nothing mindset in the population. And again, this is where awareness comes in, because once you can notice, oh gosh, I do have all or nothing beliefs, but if you can understand and not wrestle with, but try to dance with the idea that I was brainwashed to believe this in society, but it keeps getting in my way. Maybe it doesn't get in the way of your partner or that person at the gym, but you need to know what's going to get in your way.
And this is a cross-disciplinary philosophical question that every researcher stumbles upon. Is it nature or nurture that we develop, which trap we're a part of?
Right. And I think there's probably some of both, you know, for the same reason that there are some people who are innately habiters. You know, we learn certain things in our family of origin and our communities. And again, the key is self-awareness and knowing what hasn't worked for you so that you can be open to new science-based strategies that might.
And from those science-based strategies, I love what you've come up with for developing the habit of self-awareness, self-observation, metacognition, and this is the POP process. And so another acronym that's great, and I'm just wondering if we could get into that.
Absolutely. So instead of letting life burst your motivation bubble and it happening to you when you know things can't work out with your plan. Again, we're talking about in the moment decision making. You pop it, right? You take charge and you pop that plan so that you can make it work for you. And POP, as you know, you've already suggested, is another acronym, and it stands for pause, open up your options, and play. And I'll explain each one of those things. So, as I say in the book, I did not come up with the wisdom of the pause. The pause is from, you know, thousands and thousands of years.
Yes.
It gives you a moment to make a strategic response instead of having a reaction, right? And of course, in mindfulness and meditation, it really cultivates being able to take the pause. But the pause is necessary because it does just that. It gives us the chance to cognate and think. So if we can't do what we hope to do, if we're at a party and there's nothing there that is on our perfect eating plan, instead of feeling completely disheartened and down and leaving, or just feeling like you can't participate in the celebration, you think, well, it might not be perfect, but what could I do? What are compromises I can make? Or I can't do that hour trip to walk out in the fields, but I have 15 minutes. What else can I do? So that's the O, the open up the options and play. Mm-hmm. It's about, using our flexible thinking, which is so important, not just in sustainable change. And I just want to throw a little bit of science in there. People think that if they aim for doing it right, that they're more likely to stick with it. But really, research in both eating and exercise suggests that coming to a challenge with flexibility and an open mind actually is better associated with decision making.
Let's do the pause right there, because that seems like the game changer. That, even though I've read the book and hearing it again with you now, it seems like I'm going to need to continually be reminded of this, that also at a deeper level feels more true.
It's the antidote to your perfectionism too, you know? And the thing that I say in my keynotes, I have a little comic graphic of the story of the strong, mighty oak, Aesop's fable of the mighty oak and the reeds. And when the big storm comes, the oak tries with all of his might to stay standing rooted in the ground, but the small reeds bend with the wind. And guess who's left standing after the storm is gone? It's the flexible reed that didn't break. And so in life, you know, we don't think about eating and exercise like we do the rest of life. Your kid gets sick. Your dog has to go to the vet. You have an urgent deadline moved up. You bend with the wind. We bend with the wind all the time. We take it for granted. But in fact, the research suggests that we should take a very similar tact with our eating and exercise.
And along with the notion of flexibility, not even a notion, you're inviting us to hold it as a way of play with lightness. Can you go more into that about why you chose the word play for this rather than just perhaps more corporate speak brainstorming?
Absolutely. So play with the possibilities, right? So once you open up your option, you come up with the possibilities, but then you play with them. And I'm using the word play, as you said, very purposefully, because instead of it being this top down, I've got to choose the right one. Which one is going to set me up for success? It constricts our thinking. It constricts our mind. If you think about Barbara Fredrickson's broaden and build theory of positive emotions and the research on curiosity as a positive emotion, when we think about something with curiosity and in a playful way, it opens our thinking. And so rather than a chore or a burden, it's like, let me have fun with this. And you know what? There's no winning and losing, because any option I choose, that takes us to the third part of POP, the joy choice. So after you open up your options and play, then it's time to pick. And again, it's low stakes, because any option is a win. And, you know, when I decided to brand this choice, the joy choice, it made me so happy to think about. So the joy choice, which is the name of the book and the solution that is science-based that I think would help a lot more people be successful sustaining these behaviors, and the science would suggest, the joy choice is the perfect, imperfect option that lets us do something instead of nothing.
What I like is that you're bringing here not just the logic of the research. It's not just a mind shift per se, it's an attitude shift. It's an emotional shift of saying, I'm going to look at this situation and explore it and come up with something better, not only through only thinking about it, but feeling into it as well.
And valuing the imperfect option, which is what most of us have to pick a lot of the time.
And so along with this, the research that you've done into the brain science that happens and the different modes of thinking, you talk about also the executive function, which gets influenced and impacted by taking this approach.
So one of the things that I was very excited about was learning more about the science behind the role of our executive functioning in our eating, in our decision-making. So we're used to thinking about this very technical, kind of scary term, executive functioning, yuck, you know, really. In the realm of aging, our brains a lot, you know, tend to lose their executive functioning as we get older. And people, neurodivergent people, like with ADHD, also can be challenged with executive functioning. We all are, because we live in a society that taxes us cognitively, that we're always stressed out. And under those circumstances, it's very hard for us to use this powerful part of our brain, which is about pivoting, managing in the now, managing long-term projects. So if we really want to set ourselves up for success in the moment, again, in the nows that we live between and within, then we want to know how to support our executive functions. And so the POP acronym, you know, it theoretically supports working memory, one of our three primary executive functions, because working memory only lets us hold and work with one, you know, or two pieces of information at a time. Well, the POP acronym is easy to remember. So that will help us in the moment, recall it, retrieve it from memory, and open up our options and play. That is all about promoting, cultivating flexible thinking, one of the most important executive functions that, you know, whether we're talking about, you know, a happy relationship or a successful business and organization, everyone has to be flexible or it breaks, right? So flexible thinking is just critical. But again, because of the old story of behavior change, we've been taught to do it right or not at all. And this new story of behavior change says, you know what? You'll be able to stick with it if you do it however you need to keep consistently doing it.
And it seems like the focus here isn't on the content, on the specific diet that we want to achieve or the specific outcomes. What you're really offering is the part of the process to stay open and whatever goal we have is to keep employing the POP process anew, again, 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 and again, because it's joyful and playful, and it's ultimately what serves each new unplannable moment.
Absolutely. And that's actually, that was a perfect lead-in to the third primary executive function, which is referred to as self-control or inhibition. Sorry, technically it's called inhibition, but in the culture we think of self-control. And so, you know, instead of controlling ourselves for a decision, wouldn't it be better if we wanted to pick something joyful, like the joy choice? So my goal was to brand the imperfect perfect option in such a way that we would want it instead of needing to force ourselves to do something, inhibit an option that we actually don't even want to do.
It's just a different way of thinking about how we need to think about it, I think. That was my big takeaway when I kept finding the examples of POP in the book. And it's so easy to remember. And I'm just so glad that your research brings us into the world. And are your clients saying this is something easy to implement and work with right away? Or what's the timeline it takes someone to start living this way?
You know, it takes reminders. As with anything we're trying to be aware of, you know, whether it's breathing through our nose, we have to keep reminding ourselves to close our mouths, or whether it's, you know, to not get distracted by a ping that might come in. It takes awareness.
I'm speaking with Michelle Seeger, author of The Joy Choice. If you want to know more about her work, you can go to michelleseeger.com, or you can get there at newdimensions.org. I'm Travis Glenn Severa. You're listening to New Dimensions. I'm speaking with Michelle Seeger, author of The Joy Choice. And we're talking about the timeline that it might take someone learning about the joy choice into making it something that they consciously are implementing on a regular basis.
You know, as with everything, it depends on the individual and how often they practice it. And what I say to people as a way to remind themselves to use POP, the POP decision tool, is to put up little sticky notes. And oftentimes we acclimate to sticky notes. So not only put them up, but move them around so they do get your attention. I suggest people put the POP acronym and what it stands for as a contact in their phone. So if they need help retrieving it, they can remember. And then we have to use it in the moments. And that's what it's all about. And there's no failure, because with anything lifelong, all you can do is keep learning how to do it better. So I had a client, and this person was working on trying to eat just more, you know, whole foods and healthier. And she did really good meal planning, and things were going quite well at the beginning. You know, in one day, this was probably a few weeks into our coaching work, she had her own business, and a lot of work came down the pipeline that she had to get out pretty urgently, unexpectedly. And she didn't have time to make that healthful meal that she had intentionally planned. And in her past, she would have just thrown everything out, said, if I can't do it, I fail, like with the perfection disruptor. But because of remembering POP, she's like, okay, let me pause. I don't have to fail at this. There's no failing. Let me open up my options and play with the possibilities. Well, I could eat this, that, or that. It may not be what I really wanted to have, but it can sustain me, and it's not really doing anything terrible. I can feel like a success. And she picked the joy choice, the option that was going to work best for her. And here's the key: today, because what works for best for us today isn't necessarily going to be the same thing that's going to work for us tomorrow or the next day. And that's where the dynamicness and flexibility comes in.
I really appreciate hearing this, especially thank you for giving a food example, because in your book, you do kind of write that there's a different order of ease, where people who want to attempt mindfulness or meditation, it's a bit easier to implement that. Then exercise might be a little more challenging. And ultimately, our relationship with our eating is the most complex to work with, for all the reasons that we've talked about earlier today.
Absolutely. And, you know, something else that is really fun to think about is how we can not just learn it ourselves, but maybe even teach it to family and friends, how we can make it a contagion, for example. Let me tell you about what happened in my life. Besides people texting me about, you know, their POP stories, when I was in the ending of writing the book and I was under deadline and I didn't have time to take my daily hour walk, which that's my plan. That's what I like to do. So after dinner, I asked my son and husband if we could take a walk around the block. And they said yes, and we're walking outside, and about two houses down, my son turns to me and he says, "Mom, is this a joy choice for you?" Like, he knew that the walk after dinner was my joy choice because I couldn't do what I wanted.
That's so supportive, especially when we think of our children being the ones who rebel against us. So what a gift to have your son actually receive your work, understand it, reflect it back to you, and participate.
It's not always that way, but you know.
Great. Well, thank you for sharing that personal story. And I'm wondering also then if we can go from that most intimate aspect of our relationships of family into your larger service of the world. You're working with the World Health Organization around exercise initiatives. So sure, it's a personal journey for each of us, but it also has a larger systemic impact, I'm assuming.
And, you know, to be honest, and I don't know why I've stopped talking about this, but when I had that light bulb moment 30 years ago, I said, I'm going to change the world. I want to change the world when it comes to this issue. And so participating in initiatives like helping the World Organization think about how to help countries around the world communicate about and evaluate their population-based physical activity initiatives, and, you know, talking to Kaiser Permanente and trying to help them think about how to message about healthy lifestyles to their employees so that their communications are not based on convention. They're not based necessarily on what any given vendor might say should be in the materials. It's based on what the science says. So I have cared deeply about scaling the principles that we've been talking about today for people and individuals within organizations and on a population level. And, you know, I can tell you, you know, decades after I started on this, the organizations were not interested in hearing about these alternative views on healthy lifestyles. It felt when you go against what everyone says you're supposed to.
Yeah, simply by evoking the word alternative, it's automatically implied a rebellion against tradition.
Yes.
Perhaps, or we know how it should be, and we're closed to what the next science might research. I mean, a good researcher will keep modifying the conclusions as the data is updated.
Absolutely. And I want to say that that is something that happened early on in my career that I had assumed. Well, I guess I want to say to the listeners, if you noticed, we're talking about eating and exercise, but not once have we used the word weight or weight loss. And it's very purposeful because our reasons for initiating a behavior have a domino's downstream effect on the quality of our motivation. And exercising and creating dietary change, emphasizing losing weight, can be very maladaptive for a lot of the decision disruptors that we've already talked about. One of the things I learned early on that really shocked me was when my research suggested that exercising for better health, for healthy aging, was actually a maladaptive, non-optimal motivation for exercising, because I assumed what's more important, what's more intrinsically motivating than cultivating our own good health. And that was an example where when my data suggested that it was not optimal, that we had to look deeper to understand why health would be a non-optimal motivator. And again, send that message out to the world, have it replicated by other people.
This completely fascinates me. I'm surprised to hear this as well. And it harkens back to your original impetus that even those with the cancer crisis weren't finding it either. You're asking such deep questions here, and I'm keep looking forward to what you keep discovering and bringing. So with that, what are you pointing towards? What are we finding?
Yes. Well, the first thing that I forgot to say that is important to say is nothing is true for everyone, but some things are true for most. So we all know people who are passionate about their health promotion, and that's going to be a great motivation for them to eat in a certain way and exercise regularly. But as a sustainable change public health person, I've wanted to know what's going to work for most people. And so what we know to date, and of course, it's always open to changing, but there is mounting research and there's evidence-based reasons why making a behavior change to feel better in the now. There's a lot of research on exercise on this topic. There's less research on eating, but it is coming out there. And when we focus on how our in-the-moment choices make us feel, then and how the non-optimal ones make us feel and how the optimal ones make us feel, when we start to do a bit of that calculus, mental calculus, our brains start to learn to want to make the choice that's going to actually help us feel better. And I'm not going to go into detail about it, but someone whose work I love on this topic is Judson Brewer, who focuses on how to help people stop eating in non-optimal ways. And it's mindfulness, too, is also very influential in his work as well. So people often say, but I feel good when I eat the cookie, or I feel good when I eat that way that I don't want to eat. And so what we want people to start focusing on for those things is more about, sure, it may taste good going down, but again, if you're in rebellion or perfection, you might eat the whole big bag of potato chips instead of listening to your body and eating a little bit of it. So it's about teaching people to learn to listen to their body's cues instead of focusing on what's right and wrong. Again, it's about being flexible and dynamically going with the flow. It is a different mindset.
I really appreciate, again, that you're hearkening back to your mindfulness interest, right, in the research that, and whether it's mindfulness or other traditions, there's so much of a calling back to self-awareness in the now and listening to oneself. And so making that joy choice for now, based on awareness and sensitivity to ourselves, seems like how to engage with pop the best.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then reciprocally, engaging with pop then keeps cultivating this possibility.
Yes. And, you know, and hopefully you have fun popping your plan, right? So instead of it being this high stakes, you know, success failure dichotomy, it's about using what you have in the now to take the best care of yourself.
I've been speaking with Michelle Seeger, author of The Joy Choice. If you want to know more about her work, you can go to michelleseeger.com. That's michelleseeger.com, where you can also find her quiz to focus in on which trap is more common in your way of thinking. Or you can get there at newdimensions.org. I'm Travis Glenn Sabera. You've been listening to New Dimensions. This is program number 3819.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org. And just click the donate button. You can also subscribe to our free weekly podcasts and find over 1,000 hours of audio dialogues in our searchable archive. New Dimensions is produced by New Dimensions Radio in Santa Rosa, California, USA. Our executive producer is Justine Willis-Toms. Our post-production editor is Lou Judson. For over 4 decades, New Dimensions has been producing weekly conversations at the leading edge. We sincerely thank all of you who have supported us by being members of Friends of New Dimensions, as well as members of our affiliate stations. My name is Dan Drayson. On behalf of everyone at New Dimensions, whose endeavors make this program possible, I'm wishing you well. New Dimensions Radio is an independent producer supported by listener contributions. To find out more about the program you've just heard, to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter and our New Dimensions and New Dimensions Cafe podcasts, and to access thousands of other programs in the New Dimensions archive, please visit our website, newdimensions.org. That's newdimensions.org. Or call us at 707-468-5215. That's 707-468-5215. Please join us next time as we explore New Dimensions. New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. Each week, New Dimensions explores the social, political, scientific, environmental, and spiritual frontiers with some of today's foremost social innovators, thinkers, scientists, and creative artists.
Hello, I'm Meredith Heller, author of Writing by Heart. Next time on New Dimensions, I'll be talking about writing as a powerful path in navigating life's challenges. Join us.
Stats can be hard to understand, but this one isn't. Nearly 1 in 4 people can't afford food in Canada. What does food insecurity look like where you live? Look up your address at foodsecuritynow.ca. That's foodsecuritynow.ca. Join Community Food Centers Canada in making a difference today.